This message is part of the educational ministry of Columbia International University. We've been preparing world Christians to know Him and to make Him known since 1923.
Philippians 2:13. If you have your Bibles, turn there, but you don't have to. You can just listen to it. It's one of my favorite scriptures. For it is God who is at work in you, both to will and to work for His good pleasure. Let me say it again. For it is God who is at work in you, both to will and to work for His good pleasure. So when I'm sharing in the next few moments, I want you to listen to where you hear where God is at work. All right? That's what I want you to listen for. My name is Martin McCann. I serve in the College of Education, so I primarily work with teacher education. And I've been here, I guess, 11 years now, finishing up 11. My wife's name is Sherry, and she is by far the better half. We've been married 31 years come August, and I am blessed beyond measure. I have three daughters. Erin and Meredith are 23. They graduated from CIU last year, and then this past summer, Meredith married Ben Costi, and they live down here in the apartments right now. Our third daughter, Kayla, is 18, and Kayla is in the application process to come to CIU. I've been asked to share with you some insights as a father with a child with a disability. And so I'm going to kind of approach those same questions that you saw in the videos. What has been my experience? How did I process things? How have people pulled alongside? What's life really like? And then what are some things that you can do for family? So that's kind of where I'm going to be going in the next few minutes. 19 years ago, we were living in Kissimmee, Florida, which is right down by Orlando. And on Christmas morning, Sherry became very, very ill. Now, we were 7 months into the pregnancy for our third child, Kayla. And we didn't know what was going on. So we were down at the emergency room on Christmas morning, fun way to spend Christmas. And they did a sonogram to make sure that everything was okay with the pregnancy. Well, it wasn't. But they didn't tell us anything. What they did is they contacted Sherry's OB doctor and said, something's wrong. So Sherry gets the call from her doctor and says, there's something wrong with the pregnancy. We need you to go to a specialist. So I was at work. I was an administrator at a Christian school in Florida at the First Academy, First Baptist Orlando. So I drive home, total shock. So I drive Sherry to Arnold Palmer Hospital there in Orlando, and right next to the hospital is where Dr. Carlin was supposed to meet with us. So we're sitting in the lobby, and we have no background in our family of anything going on in a pregnancy like this. This is totally out of left field. And we're sitting there in shock, and I said to Sherry, who are we seeing? And Sherry says, we're seeing Dr. Carlin. And all of a sudden, it hits me. Dr. Carlin was the father of one of my Christian high school girls at the First Academy. So at the most critical moment where we are in shock, God gently puts us in the hand of a believer who's doing marketplace ministry. And so we go in with Dr. Carlin, and he does what doctors have to do. They give you the worst case scenario. He gives us the worst case scenario, and then he says, okay, now this is what's probably going to happen. He said, your daughter, it looks like she has spina bifida, and then he proceeds to tell us what to expect, and we're still kind of like this. And then he takes our hands and he prays. Right there at the beginning, he prays. So we go about our life trying to process things, and the next month I'm having my devotions, and I was in John chapter 9. And if you remember in John chapter 9 at the very beginning, that's where the disciples come to Jesus and they say, why was this man born blind? Y'all remember that passage? And I got to verse 3, and that's where I just went, ugh. In verse 3, Jesus' response was this, so that the works of God might be made manifest or evident in his life. And it occurred to me at that moment, the Spirit teaching to me, that Mark, it's okay. You don't have to understand what's happening. Matter of fact, I don't even like what's happening, but God's okay with me feeling that way, because I'm still learning. He said, but I'm in control. This is going to be for my glory and for your best. Romans 8:28, all things work together for good for those who love the Lord and are called according to his purpose. So those scriptures at that moment kind of gave me deep peace that while I don't know exactly what's coming, because I have no learning, no knowledge of this, I'm just trying to learn it, God's still going to be in control. Kayla was born with spina bifida. Now, spina bifida, for those of you who don't know, When the baby's developing, the neural tube closes for your spine. And hers did not close all the way. And what happens is the amniotic fluid comes in contact with the spinal cord and causes damage from that point down. And so Kayla's was what they call an L4, L5, which is pretty low on her back. So as a result, Kayla doesn't have any feeling in her feet. She can't wiggle her toes. She can't wiggle her ankles. She has very little feeling from her knees down. She has some sensation. She has very strong quads, so she walks with arm crutches, kind of like a soldier. Now, for long distances, Kayla will use a wheelchair, but most of the time you'll see her, she's using arm crutches. That's not the most dangerous part of her life. She has something known as hydrocephalus, and many children who are born with spina bifida also have hydrocephalus. God has designed your brain with cerebral spinal fluid, and that provides a cushion so that when you guys bonk your heads, it kind of gives some protection, but it also provides the nutrients that goes to the various parts of your brain. If you have hydrocephalus, your brain is either producing too much of that fluid or your body is not absorbing that fluid. So what happens is the pressure builds and builds and builds, and it kills you. And so the only way to survive is to have what's called a shunt. And a shunt is a one-way valve. There's a catheter that goes down the middle of her brain, and it comes up to this one-way shunt under the skin, and it drains down a pipe and then goes into her system, and that's how her body takes care of it. But if the shunt fails, she can go comatose in 8 hours. And the only way you know that the shunt's failing is by some of the symptoms, and the symptoms are like the flu. So every time she'd have a cold or the flu, we're like, is this it? Is this it? And she's had a lot of revisions through the years because that happens. Many times people have come to me and they said, Mark, aren't you angry with God? And when I think about that question, in my opinion, that's presupposing that God's doing something to me or against me. And so I never have really grasped that question. Are you angry at God? Why is it got to be angry at God? See, I see God as a loving heavenly Father who is working out His plan for my best and for His good. And while I don't understand it fully, He's still in control. There are parts I don't like, okay, but He's still in control. Now, as a result, remember the John 9:3, the works of God might be made manifest? God has given us the opportunity to share Christ with some of the top pediatric neurosurgeons in the world. Because as we got a closer relationship with the head of neurosurgery, Arnold Palmer, he started putting us in contact with other people. He sent us to some conferences, and he actually came to us and asked us to start a support group. So we started the Hydrocephalus Family Support Group, 18 years ago, down with Arnold Palmer Hospital. And that was just a way to reach out to families who were for processing this. And what Yogi used to do, now Yogi is a practicing Hindu. He still has not come to Christ. And I really want you to pay close attention to this. Because you may not have a family member with a disability, but what I'm about to share are things that you can do in ministry for families that have a disability. When we came home from the hospital, you know, you're learning all this new stuff to take care of. And the pastor's wife, Candy Fox, came to us and said, okay, I want to learn. What do I need to know to take care of Kayla physically? And then Candy would come in and she would spot us. She would watch Kayla and Aaron and Meredith, and that would give Sherry and I a chance just to go out to dinner. Sometimes you forget, families that have children with medical needs, they rarely get to go out to dinner because they're so focused on taking care of those needs. Somebody else recognized that when you have older siblings or younger siblings and one of the children has medical needs, there's a lot of attention that's given to that one child. And naturally, the other children need some attention too. And so some people picked up on that and they thought, oh, okay, what can we do for Aaron and Meredith? And so they would take them and do something special with them just from time to time. And that kept some semblance of normalcy in our life and kept some things balanced for us. I had one brother who taught Kayla how to fish, and I could hug his neck for that one. And I had another brother who said, Mark, let's teach Kayla how to hunt, and you can hunt and fish on my property anytime you want. So we go down to Jackson. It gives me an hour drive down to the place where we hunt. Hunt all day, an hour drive back, and we have some very deep conversations along the way. I also like to do that with my other daughters. Another thing is a youth pastor. I have a youth pastor who is not afraid of having a teenager in his youth group that has a disability. And so Shay, because he also had some experience in this, Shay was fine with having Kayla going on the outings, like whitewater rafting and things like that. Now, I would go as a parent, but still, Shay was totally fine with that. I had another youth pastor who is a karate instructor, black belt instructor, and Kayla comes to him and says, would you train me to do karate? Now, she's standing there. She only stands this high because that's one of the things that will always be for her. And she's got her arm crutches, and she's looking at him, and he looks at her, and he told me this later on. He said, I looked at her, and he'd never had a disabled child come to him for training. And he thought, you know, it's not a disability. It's a different ability. It's not a disability. It's a different ability. And so he began to look at how can I train her? And so what he would do is he put pool noodles around her crutches so that when she would hit them, it wouldn't hurt so bad. And then he put gloves on the end. And Kayla's now a black belt. He's taken her that far as to her training. Those are some things where people look at the situation and go, what can I do? Not to be afraid. Now, what's it like living with a child with a disability? Well, sometimes you just have to laugh at some things. Life just gets weird and you just have to laugh. All right, think about this. A child in a car seat, right? Teething. And you're driving, and what do? You look in the mirror to make sure the child's not choking or anything like that. So Sherry's driving down the road one day, and she looks in the mirror, and of course, Kayla's teething, and there is blood all over Kayla's face. I mean, all over, blood everywhere. And Sherry's like, oh! So she pulls over, and this is what happened. See, Kayla's toes were nice and soft, nice and warm. She has no feeling in them. What a great chew toy. So she chewed her toes until they bled. So that's, no, you're just like, okay, you live with it. One time we were at the doctor's office, and she was about 4, and the doctor says, can you feel your toes? And Kayla goes, yeah. And so, you know, that's just, you laugh with it. Now, when Kayla got a little older, people would ask about her. They'd see her in cast when she'd have some of her surgeries for her legs. They had to actually, her legs were turned in, and her feet were turned in like this. So they had to cut the tibias and rotate her legs, and then they put them back together, and then they redid her feet to be straighter. But she'd be casted, and people would say, what happened to you? And Kayla knew people were kind of feeling weird about asking things, so she tried to make them feel more comfortable, and this is what she would say. They'd say, what happened to you? And she'd be real serious, and she said, it was a drive-by shooting. And then the people were like, oh, and she, I'm just kidding. It wasn't a drive-by shooting. Another time, since we're in Florida, another time a person said, what happened to your legs? And she, it was a shark attack. She's got some other wingers, but I'm not going to give those away. She can tell them to you someday. You have to develop a balanced biblical mindset when you're raising a child with a disability. Kayla's disability is primarily physical, but she had many times with spina bifida and hydrocephalus, you'll have learning disabilities. So there can be some cognitive challenges. But the main thing is you're training the child to be balanced in life. And so when people come to Kayla and they say, what's wrong with your legs? Kayla's response is, she'll look at her legs and she'll say, there's nothing wrong with my legs. This is the way God made me. That sounds great, doesn't it? It's like, oh, wow. Flip the coin, Kayla will come to me and say, Dad, I really wish I can run like Aaron and Meredith. So there's this balance, there's this tension that happens as the children are growing. And you've got to work the kids through that balance. We would always tell Kayla, you can do things, you just have to do things differently. That's kind of been our mindset with Kayla. But you have to understand there's some struggles that I deal with as a parent. I'm just going to share a couple of those with you. This is kind of getting personal. One is the impact on the siblings. You know, just that's kind of a struggle for me to see how this impacts Aaron and Meredith and their lives and how they have to walk through this through the years. You have to be okay with how other people view you as you're parenting a child with a disability. All right, now, because Kayla has the little feeling down there, she can't, when she was a baby, to teach her to walk, we had to put her in a standing frame and Velcro in. It's like a straight board. And you have to teach her to fall while strapped to this board, which is really kind of fun. And so she'd have to catch herself. That puts weight on her bones and causes her bones to be stronger. You have to have weight on those legs. So when Kayla started to learn to walk, she had a little walker first, then she had these crutches. When we'd be out in the public, if there was a slick spot, Kayla would fall. You just had to get used to Kayla falling. And we trained Kayla to call out. When you hear go bang somewhere in the house, and she'd call out, I'm okay. So then we know, okay, life's good. But in public, if she would slip and fall, we would step over her and keep going. Now imagine what people thought of us. Oh, you terrible parents. You let your poor child lay on the ground. Well, she had to learn to get up on her own. Now we watched to make sure she was okay, but you just have to get used to people not understanding what you're doing as a parent sometimes. One of the tough struggles is this desire for independence. Now, you guys know you're glad to be here at school because you're away from family, right? you have some independence. When you have a child with a disability, because of the amount of care that you have to give, they really want independence. And so, for example, we go to church. When we moved up here 11 years ago and we started attending Riverbend, Kayla didn't want to sit with us. And I was like, I'm the dad. You sit with family. Because that's what families do. And I had to understand, wait a minute, no, her desire not to sit with us has to do with her desire to be independent. So she, to this day, she'll sit off over to the side, and I have to be okay with that. Now, she's with us on other occasions, but in those situations, that's for her a feeling of being independent. You have to temper independence with real threats. This has probably been my greatest challenge. When Kayla likes to whitewater, and Shay, bless his heart, as a youth pastor, encouraged us to go to these things. And so Kayla, we whitewatered on the closed course in just over the border in North Carolina. Has some good rapids on those. We've been on the French Broad twice. But the last time we went was when Kayla was 16. And Kayla decided she wanted to go not in the raft, but in a ducky. And a ducky is like a kayak, the blow-up cap kayak. Now, French Broad's not that bad. The rain was up, and so they were like level threes, if you guys know what level threes are like. But Kayla says to me, I want to go in a ducky. And I froze. I panicked. Do I let her do this? Is that safe? Because they always tell you you could die when you do this. So am I being a wise dad or a foolish dad? Am I inhibiting her from growing? Or am I causing something that could really cause a problem for her? And what does this look like years down the road? And all this is happening in the nanoseconds after she tells me, I want to do this. So I go to the guide, and I say to the guide, here's the situation. The guy says, let me go talk to her. So the lady guide goes over, talks to her, comes back. She goes, I think it's okay. I'll be close. I'll watch her. Now, I've watched these guides before. They're professionals. So I said, okay, let's do this. And then I asked another friend, another brother, would you position yourself between me and her so she sees that I'm not close and she has some of that independence, but I know I've got another person there. So I go on ahead. I get down this ramp, and here it comes. Kayla comes into this level three, and she breaches. She goes in sideways to this level three, and she gets hung up. And the water's going, and she's hung up, and there she goes, out over there. And right then, my heart's going, oh! And that guide reached in, like, with one hand, like, pulled her right up into the kayak. Like, it was incredible. Like, don't make a river guide mad. Just, so Kayla, when after Kayla catches her breath, and after I got my composure, Kayla comes over with the guide, and Kayla says, I think I'm ready to go be in the raft instead of the ducky. And I'm like, I think that's a great idea. So anyway, so Kayla shifts over, but afterwards I had to have a serious talk with her, and I had to say, honey, this is the situation. I had to make a decision about what was dangerous and what was not dangerous for you. And someday I'm going to have to say no to something, and you just have to be able to deal with that. So it's a tension that you have as a parent. You have to remember that God doesn't see things the way we see things, right? Scriptures talk about that. When sometimes I would feel remiss, I would feel sadness that Kayla doesn't have some of the life experiences that you do. Kayla hasn't worked a time clock job, fast food, and things like that. Kayla hasn't learned to drive yet. She's turning 19 May 3rd because she has to learn to drive with hand controls. I'm not licensed to do hand controls. I've got to be licensed to do hand controls just to teach her how to drive. So those experiences, she didn't have the neighborhood playing experiences. Now, she's been to other people's houses. So those things kind of weigh on me like, Lord, she doesn't have those things that cause you to grow, those strengthening areas. Well, not long ago, a doctor in Florida contacted me because this happens sometimes. Our name goes out to people that have situations like this, and they'll contact, say, could you tell me about life? So anyway, this doctor calls me or emails me. And we've gone back and forth. Anyway, her daughter's now three, and she said, what can I expect next? So I'm trying to encourage this doctor, and I began to share the following. I said, well, Kayla's had 20 surgeries. Now think about that. Kayla's had 20 surgeries. How many of you like to get stuck by a needle? Nobody? How would you like to have 20 IVs put in your arm? All right, that makes her pretty tough, I have to tell you. You got to be pretty tough. Kayla has performed on the Koger stage with USC Strings Project on several occasions. And this is the things I'm trying to tell this doctor to encourage her that your child can do these things. Kayla has competed equestrian. She rides horses with Special Olympics. Kayla hunts. She fishes. She's a black belt. She stood alone on stage in front of hundreds of people, and they all watched her go through her routines. One time she fell. She fell. And the sensei of the division starts to jump up to help her, and her instructor puts his arm out and stops the sensei and says, she will be fine. Kayla gets up and finishes the competition. And as I'm sharing these things with this doctor, I start to cry because the Lord reminded me, Mark, I am at work in Kayla, both to will and to work for my good pleasure. It doesn't have to look like what you are thinking it had to look like. I'm the one that's doing that. And so that's just something to bear in mind. You may have a son or daughter that's disabled. You may someday have a son or daughter that's disabled. You have to remember God is in control. So I want you to remember Philippians 2:13. I want you to remember Romans 8:28. You have to stay in the Word. You have to stay connected. You have to be thankful. Be thankful for the little things that you see God do. And some days it's just tough, and you want to cry, and you cry, and you get back up, and you keep going, because it is God who is at work in you, both to will and to work for His good pleasure. Thank you. Now,
thank you, Dr. McCann. We debated about whether or not to have him move the podium or for me to come up and do a karate kick on it or something. We deferred on that. It's actually quite humorous for me to listen to some of his stories, particularly as he comes at this whole situation with disabilities from a father's perspective, because I'm not sure if I mentioned it earlier, but when my accident happened, I was a teenager. I was 14 years old and a freshman in high school. So I have probably done a lot of the things that create the stress and the gray hairs that parents with special needs kids oftentimes have. So I kind of enjoyed that. Very good. So I just wanted to share a little more about my journey over the years and some of how God has worked in my life and some of the situations that He's allowed me to be in, because I feel so humbled and just thankful for how God has worked in my life. I had mentioned this morning that I had not put on a seatbelt when I got into the pickup truck with my friends who were also teenagers. And we were actually running errands for our church that night, which created a whole host of theological issues and challenges for me along the way, because I oftentimes growing up as a young kid, I would think to myself, well, I was a Christian. I was at church on a Sunday evening. I was with the youth group. I was doing something the pastor had asked me to do. I was doing a good thing and was not cutting up and doing bad things that I could have been doing as a teenager. So why would God allow something like this to happen in my life? Because it didn't seem fair to me. And I tell you, for the first 4 or 5 years after the accident, I can barely put into words just the misery and the depression that I experienced as a teenager. Because I had gone from being very athletic. I tease my wife on this all the time. I tell her, I was the best baseball player on the field. And I could shoot hoops with the best of them. And I was the best football player that was out there. I had girlfriends left and right. Everybody wanted to be, you know, just the story goes on and on. None of that's true though. But as a teenager, I had life in my hands exactly the way that I wanted it to be. My life felt perfect. I went to church, I played sports, I had friends. I really didn't have any problems that I dealt with. And so to go from that to to being stuck in a body that for a long time could not move at all, and still now, 27 years later, can only partially move, was just extremely challenging, not just from a physical standpoint, but also from an emotional standpoint, from a mental standpoint, from a spiritual standpoint. Any angle that you could look at it, it was a huge challenge for me. And I think a lot of it had to do with just being a teenager at the time. And I don't know if your daughter has dealt with this or any of you others, but a lot of times as teenagers, we're just self-conscious whenever we have everything going the way it's supposed to go. But when my particular situation happened, I became extremely concerned and just obsessed with what other people thought of me. Because y'all know how it works. You know, you see somebody come along and they're in a wheelchair or they're walking differently or they talk differently. Then our natural response, even my natural response, is to do like this. You know, you look and you think to yourself, well, I wonder what's going on them. I wonder what happened. You look again and you know, that's just the natural thing that we do. And for me as a teenager, that just tore me apart on the inside. It just killed me because I was so self-conscious about what other people thought, and they think I look dumb and I can't do anything anymore, and just life just stinks. And I'll be honest with you, I was an emotional wreck for most of my high school years. I had all kinds of negative thoughts that I know Satan was putting every thought possible in there to tear me down about my abilities and what I could accomplish, and you're never going to get married, and I was ready to quit and give up on life. And during this time that I was going through all of this stuff, trying to get used to living in a body that would only halfway work, I had all these questions for the Lord about why He had allowed that to happen in my life. Because like I said earlier, it just wasn't fair. So through those years, I was very distant from the Lord. I had stopped going to church. I didn't want anything to do with church people. Lord, to get up in front of a group of people and talk about Jesus was like the farthest thing from my mind, or to go to Bible college. But I was spiritually in a rut where I was so separated from the Lord that I don't know if my salvation was in question or not, but I was just a spiritual mess. And so I stayed like that for a good 4 or 5 years, and oftentimes was just ready to quit and give up on life. Unfortunately, the Lord didn't quit and give up on me during that time. I'm very thankful for that. After my senior year of college, I went to a small college, or my senior year of high school, I went to a small college up in North Carolina called St. Andrews College. And let me just tell you, St. Andrews was like the most liberal of places that you ever could have gone. I mean, if it could have been done, they did it. If it could have been taught, they taught it. Everything was just like chaos there. I hated it. But it got me out of the house. And the most important thing ever in the world for me when it came to dealing with my situation and the emotions and the spiritual emptiness that I was feeling was for me to leave home and go out and experience some of that independence that Dr. McCann was talking about. So I go to college and I'm there my freshman year, and somehow or another, actually I know how this happened, I think God had His hand on the whole thing. Out of all these 500 or 600 students that were on campus, most of whom did not know the Lord or care about the Lord, I somehow got connected with a handful of Christians that were on that campus that went to Bible studies, went to worship times, they would pray together, they actually cared about each other, they would go to church on Sundays. And here there was this little handful of 18, 19, and 20-year-old college students that I somehow got connected with. So they started asking me, well, Byron, why are you in the wheelchair? What's wrong with your legs? How come you can't walk? Blah, blah, blah. And what it did for me, and I think this is part of the healing process that someone with a disability might experience, is it gave me an opportunity to talk about my situation. You see, like I said earlier, I'd come from a small town where people talk funny and talk country and all that. Y'all know how that is. And because it was such a small town and everybody knew what had happened and nobody wanted to talk about it, for that 4-year period, I never had anyone that I could really just pour out my heart to while I was going through all these challenges and changes. So when I got to college and I met these Christians that were there that demonstrated a genuine care and concern for me, and I had the opportunity to share with them what was going on in my life and about my frustrations and about how sometimes it just stunk to be in this dumb wheelchair. It was actually healing to my heart and to my spirit to be able to connect with them. These guys were crazy. Let me just tell you one story. I was in my dorm room and was being a good little student, like I know all y'all are. And I had books stacked all the way up to here, working on this paper that was probably due the week before. And so I'm sitting in there and I'm working on my paper. Well, these college students that I had gotten to know that were Christians, they came by and they knocked on the door and they said, "Hey, we're going to Walmart. You want to go?" And so I was like, "Y'all are goofy. Y'all are hanging out at Walmart." But I was looking for any reason to like not work on the paper. So I said, "Sure, I'll go." And so I went and I jumped in my van with them and we drove off to Walmart. And so we're hanging out at the store there and just, I'm minding my own business. I'm not doing anything out of the ordinary. I'm just driving my chair up and down the aisles of Walmart there, looking at the stuff that's up on the shelf and all that. And then out of the blue, this just totally caught me off guard, totally didn't expect it. This Nerf football comes flying through the air. Seriously, I'm dead serious about that. I was moving just like this. It comes flying through the air and it tags me like right in the back. I'm like, "What the heck was that?" So I spin my chair around like this and I look behind me and one of my friends, one of those Christians that was back there, had picked up that Nerf football and threw the Nerf football at me. I'm like, "Wait a minute, I'm in a wheelchair, dude, don't you know?" So he leans over and he grabs another Nerf football out from underneath the shelf and I'm like, "Oh crap." Sorry, I probably wasn't supposed to say that. But anyway, next thing I know is I'm like taking off down the aisles of Walmart as fast as my wheelchair would go, up and down the aisles just like this. And I turn and I look back behind me one time and all like four of the other friends of mine are like chasing me up and down the aisles with Nerf footballs. I can feel them hitting the back of my chair. At one point I stopped and I said, "Y'all hold on just a second." And I changed gears on my chair. Like I bumped it up to like third gear so it goes as fast as it could go. And I said, "Okay, resume action." And I took off down the aisle. It was crazy. Listen, I don't tell you that story so that you leave chapel today and you go down to the Walmart here in Columbia and you find a disabled person to throw footballs at, okay? That's Hey, I see y'all out there. I know you're thinking that. That's not the point of the story. But the point of the story is that those college students, those Christians, those believers, those people that were inviting me to Bible study, those people that were praying with me, those people that were introducing me to the promises of God that I mentioned earlier, were also inviting me to Walmart. Were also throwing Nerf footballs at me and treating me just like a normal person. And I want to tell y'all here today, the Lord used those college students that day. People just like you, every one of you in this room. People just like you, He used them to transform my life, to provide healing in my heart. Yes, it was in the spiritual things and in the Bible studies, but it was also just in the fun things where we just hung out. God used that to help me to heal on the inside. I used to get up in my wheelchair and I would spin around on the college campus, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning. And I would pray to the Lord, asking Him to heal my body. And this is probably 5-6 years after the accident that I'd been in. And I vividly remember saying, "Lord, if you're not going to heal my legs, can you at least just heal my hands? Can you at least just do that?" Well, clearly the Lord never chose to do that. I believe today that He could do it. Sitting right here on this stage, I don't doubt for a second that He could do it. But what God chose to do was He chose to provide that healing in my heart and in my spirit and in my outlook on life, my outlook on other people. That's how He provided healing for my life. And I can tell you, it wasn't a single moment where it happened, but it was over the course of that time with connecting with those college students that were seeking the Lord. There was a nurse on the campus. I tell you, this nurse, her name was Jean Callahan, and I believe she was an angel that was like sent there by God. And Jean Callahan would be in the infirmary every single day, and I think I just looked for reasons to go to the infirmary because I knew she was there. And I would go and I would roll my wheelchair up in that little office, and she'd be sitting in this little cubicle waiting on six students to show up. And I'd pull up and I'd look in the door. I said, "Miss Jean, you there?" She said, "Yeah." And I'd start to ask her questions that I had heard in my classes that were about religious studies and the Bible and all this. And just about every day when I got out of class, I would go to Miss Jean's office. And when I'd peek my head around the corner and she'd say, "Come on in." And I'd drive my little chair in there. And when I started asking her questions, she would, every single time, I can see this as clear as day, every time she would reach down to her bottom drawer and she would open that drawer up. And what do you think she pulled out of there? She pulled a Bible out of there. Every single time she'd reach in and pull out that black leather Bible. Now listen, this thing was like this big. I'm telling you, I think she had the answer to everything in there. But I wholeheartedly believe that God put that woman there to help minister to me when I was at the point of my deepest need. So my point with the whole thing is to just be aware of those people that are around you, because all it really takes is just being somebody's friend and just loving on them and always being ready for that one moment when somebody throws out that question about why did God allow this to happen in my life? Now, what I learned is that it wasn't my life. That was where the real answer was, right? It wasn't my life, because when I was that 9-year-old boy and I gave my life over to him and accepted Christ into my heart, I was giving him my life. And what I began to learn and realize is that now that it was his, it was my responsibility to turn it over to him and allow him to do great things in it. So I feel very thankful for some of those experiences. I left CIU with a whole different perspective on what God wanted to accomplish in my life and how he wanted to work and actually who the Lord is. I learned more about God's holiness while I was here on this campus. And I think more than anything else over the years of being paralyzed and dealing with the situations I deal with, it is learning about the holiness of God here at CIU that transformed me more than anything. When I left here, I went and moved up to Charlotte, North Carolina, where I still live. And worked with Johnny and Friends. I think many of you probably know who Johnny Erickson Tada is. I worked in their church relations department for about 9 years and was helping churches to establish ministries that would reach out to families with disabled kids. So I would travel around North and South Carolina and train churches and teach leaders about how to handle kids with autism and cerebral palsy and different learning situations that they had. But during my time with Johnny and Friends, probably the greatest experience that I had was the opportunity to lead mission trips to Kenya. Now, let me just tell you, I look at myself in the mirror and I'd say, okay, wheelchair, hands don't work, legs don't work, you ain't going to Africa. You can forget that. But let me tell you what God said. The Lord said, you can do it. And so one day I'm sitting in my office and my boss was actually taking care of this whole trip. And he comes to me and he says, "Byron, my wife is sick. We've got a problem going on. I'm not going to be able to do the trip to Kenya. So we have two options. We're either going to cancel the trip or we're going to dump the whole thing in your lap." I'd never been on a mission trip my whole life. I'd never organized one, planned one, any of that. But I looked that guy square in the eye and I said, "Dump it." And he gave me every single responsibility for building the team, training the missionaries, the volunteers that would go with us, sending the wheelchairs over to Nairobi, working with the team in Kenya, providing all of the equipment over there that we needed. And lo and behold, in 2005, I got on a plane with my wife and about 15 other people, and we all went to Nairobi, Kenya, and gave out wheelchairs to people that were in hospitals and orphanages. I still think about that, and I still can't believe it. And the reason I can't believe it is because I know that something like that is not something that I could have done. It is only by the power and grace of God that something like that could happen. And what I want all of you guys to understand and learn from that is to not limit how God wants to work in your life. I don't care if you're disabled or not. That's a truth that is for every single one of us, is that we should not limit how God can work in our lives, how he can use us. That might be right here in Columbia, or it might be on the other side of the earth, but the Lord can do it. So wonderful opportunities there that I can only attribute to the Lord. And as I attribute things to the Lord, I'll just share two more things with you. One thing to attribute to the Lord is my wife, okay? Because y'all, she has got to have like the patience of Job to put up with me, but she does. We've been married for 11 years, and she is definitely a way that God has provided and blessed me for sure. We have very different stories about how we met. Mine is true and hers is not. But true story here, before I was able to drive, that's a whole other story that I'll share in a minute. Any and everywhere that I would go, whether it was work or church or meeting, whatever, I always had to ask people to come and pick me up in my van. And so they would come, they'd leave their car at my house, they'd get in my car and they'd drive me in my van, we'd go wherever, and they'd bring my van back, get in their car, and then they would leave. So I decided I wanted to go to this church in Charlotte, and I called up one of the deacons on the phone, and I said, hey, I want to go to y'all's church. Can you go around and ask some of the Sunday school classes for some volunteers to come and pick me up? So he did that. And so he came back with a piece of paper that had like 10 or 12 names on it of people that had signed up to volunteer. And I started looking through the list, and I'm getting ready to start calling people. And I go down, and I see this name that says Scarlett Smith. And I thought to myself, you know, this is coming right out of CIU, okay? Where I was, you know, I was still in CIU, I think. But I thought to myself, I just can't call a girl to get a ride to church. I'm not going to do that because I'm going to have impure motives and I'm going to, you know, be calling her for the wrong reason and all that. So I went down the list and I called all the men on the list. Well, one Sunday evening, I was at this church and it was an ice cream social. And I come up to this group of young people that were there and she was in the group. And so we go around and we start naming what our names was and everything. And she said, my name's Scarlett. And I said, Scarlett Smith? She said, yeah, how do you know that? I said, I think you signed up on the list to drive me to church. I never called her. So really, I was thinking the whole time, I'm not going to call a girl to get a ride to church, when I should have been thinking, I'm going to call a girl and get a ride to church. Right? So anything, one thing led to another, and I think I called her like the next day probably, and we went out to lunch. But so we started getting to know each other, and this is like right around summertime, and we had both gone off to these camps. I went to Johnny and Friends camp, and she went to something else for young people. And we got back, and I called her on the phone, and I said, hey, how's your camp? And she goes, blah, 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 you know how it is. Blah, 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 blah. So you don't have the mic now. So she tells me about her camp and goes on and on. And she said, well, how was your camp? And I said, well, my camp kind of ended early. I'm in the hospital. We had an activity at the camp where all the people with disabilities, regardless of how limited you were, your daughter can relate to this, they got to go tubing down the river. And I was going tubing, and I kind of broke my leg in the process. They were transferring me down into the tube, and my femur snapped. You know, one of those moments where you're thankful that you can't feel your legs. I was actually scared to go tubing, okay? And one of my friends talked me into it. And then after I got done tubing and everything, I was like, yeah, my chest was like pumped out to here, and I was like, I was calling myself Super Quad, okay? Because, you know, I'm a quadriplegic, and you know, none of the other paralyzed people wanted to go. So I was like, yeah, they're all chicken. I'm Super Quad and stuff like that. And then I get back to the hotel and I realize I broke my leg. And I said, okay, maybe I'm not Super Quad after all. So anyway, I'm in the hospital and Scarlett starts visiting me in the hospital. She comes bringing steak burritos and cheeseburgers, and I'm like, oh, I like this girl. So anyway, the Lord worked through that whole process of me being in the hospital and sick and these different experiences that we had to build a connection between the two of us. And finally, I figured out that she liked me. And when I got out of the hospital, I was like, okay, we gotta, I think we're gonna hang out a little bit. So anyway, I say all that just because the Lord just provided in an unbelievable way for the two of us to be together, because usually from the world standpoint, most people aren't gonna marry a disabled guy with limitations like what I have. But she approaches life from a godly perspective, and I approach life from a godly perspective, and the Lord just joined that in an awesome way to allow us to be together, and now we have two crazy kids. We won't go there. Last story, and then I'm going to turn it over to Rick. The Lord, talking about the Lord working in unbelievable ways and not limiting how God can use us and work through us. I have always had a dream to be able to drive my own car. You know, because I was 14 when I was paralyzed and never had that opportunity. That was one of the most challenging things about dealing with my situation, was not being able to drive. And even during my years here at CIU, I tried to do it. I went through a training process, and back then I had spasms kind of like Ben that I was talking about this morning. So I could just drive down the sidewalk and my legs would just be bouncing off all over the place. And so anyway, long story short, I finally got the muscle spasms dealt with a couple of years ago. And I thought to myself, I think I'm going to try this driving thing again. So I go through this long process of being trained with hand controls, like Dr. McCann was talking about. And so I finally get to the point where I'm able to get the hand controls put on my minivan. And so I can drive my own car now. I've got a control on this side for gas and brakes. I push forward for gas and backwards for brake. And then on this side, there's like a miniature steering wheel that I turn, you know, like this. So it's kind of like patting your head and rubbing your stomach at the same time. So don't worry, y'all. I live in Charlotte, so I'm not anywhere on the roads in Columbia. But this thing is amazing. It's got a little touchpad, almost like an iPad right here. And so I go through all these hours and hours and hours of training to get to the point where I can operate the van, and now I successfully drive anywhere and everywhere I want to go. So, the Lord works in amazing ways if He can equip someone like me to be able to do it. The first day I went out on the road by myself, I pulled out of my neighborhood and I went down to the stop sign, to the stoplight, and I was praying. I was like, oh Lord God, please help me. Please help me. Oh Lord God, you got to protect me. You got to protect everybody else. So I get to the stoplight and I've got to turn left. So I know I have to turn across the traffic. And I'm like, Lord, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I can do this. And I don't know what provoked it, but I turned and I looked to my right. And there was one of these big old 1970 sedans that was there. And this little old lady was sitting inside of it. She was holding on to the very top of the steering wheel. And I swear she was looking through the steering wheel hole to be able to see the road. So I'm glad she's going straight. Yeah. But the Lord said to me as clear as day, if she can do it, then you can do it. He really did. It was a Holy Spirit moment. If she can do it, then you can do it. So I bumped myself up like this. And when that light turned green and that green arrow come on, I revved that thing and I took off. And next thing I know, I was out on the highway and I was passing an 18-wheeler at 60 miles an hour. So God does amazing things. Only the Lord can accomplish some of the things that I've seen, I think, in my life, whether it's driving, whether it's traveling to the other side of the world to give out wheelchairs, whether it's being blessed with a beautiful wife and beautiful kids. And if none of that other stuff, then I feel blessed just because of how God has changed my heart. Because He's helped me to see how He sees. And I love that. So thank you guys very much.
We hope you were blessed by this message. Additional audio messages and learning resources are available at www.ciu.edu/bookstore or call 803-807-5263. Messages are also available by podcast at iTunes. CIU is a regionally accredited biblical university offering undergraduate and graduate degree programs. Our purpose is to educate people from a biblical worldview to impact the nations with the message of Christ. Thank you for letting us minister to you today.